You're listening to the Humans of DevOps podcast, a podcast focused on advancing the humans of DevOps through skills, knowledge, ideas, and learning, or the SKIL framework.
Nations that are winning, and winning in terms of embracing, you know, cloud-native practices, and the win, as I'll say in air quotes, digital transformation is becoming an overloaded term, but the organizations that are winning are making heavy investments in their employee and their full-time folks.
Hey everyone, it's Jason Baum, Director of Member Experience at DevOps Institute, and this is the Humans of DevOps podcast. Welcome back. Thank you for joining us again. Over the past few weeks, if you've tuned in, we've been diving deeper into human skills and human issues, especially with how they pertain to DevOps and tech professionals. If you didn't have a chance to listen last week, I highly encourage you to listen to our first ever panel. We covered imposter syndrome with Pauline Narvis and Leonardo Murillo, and I definitely encourage you to check that out. So please check it out and subscribe so you don't miss any of our podcasts. This week, we'll be discussing dynamic learning capability. And here to discuss the topic with me is Eric Chapman. Eric is a principal consultant at Liatrio, helping their clients deliver software faster and safer. With a background in software development, he has spent the last 20 years architecting, building, and enabling software systems for large, complex organizations spanning the U.S. government, healthcare, financial, and e-commerce sectors. And with that, Eric, welcome officially to the Humans of DevOps podcast.
Awesome. Thanks, Jason. It's an honor to be here. I'm a big fan of the podcast, so thanks for inviting me and excited to talk about the topic of dynamic learning today.
Awesome. Thank you so much for joining us. And are you ready to get human?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. You know, I always wonder if someone said no, what would I say?
Yeah, I was thinking that in my head, but I was like, yeah, it's a little too early to start dropping bad DevOps dad jokes. So better.
Yeah. Oh, no, I always have bad jokes. So don't worry about it. We actually covered that in one of our podcasts.
Maybe that's a future topic because we'll just cover bad DevOps dad jokes.
I could fill 30 to 45 minutes. One-liner dad jokes.
Exactly.
All right. So we're going to be talking dynamic learning capability, a topic I will self-admittedly have no knowledge on. So this should be interesting. So what do we mean by dynamic learning capability?
All right. So I'm going to start with my best impression of an Oxford type of definition for dynamic learning. And then let's break that down. So what I've got is the organization's ability to adapt to the methods used to teach and grow their team members to best meet the needs of their customers based on an environmental and technological changes. How's that?
That's a lot. That's a mouthful. So what actually does that mean?
Yeah, great question. And I was hoping you would ask that. So I think it's important to tie this back to DevOps, given the name of the podcast. So what does that mean? Why is it relevant in software delivery and to DevOps culture and organization? So breaking that down, what's that mean for an organization? So in the context of software delivery, as I said earlier, so tying it back to some earlier podcasts and a big movement we see in our industry right now is value stream. So using inputs from the value stream to describe the system or systems in place that facilitates the flow of value. So I like to talk about these value streams or systems as paved roads. So the road doesn't always have all the reflectors and all this. It's not always a fun journey. It could be a bumpy journey, but the systems are what they are. And the value stream helps bring visibility to that. And the value stream also highlights the constraints or gives you cost of delays. So those constraints manifest themselves as people, process, and technology. So to take it back, using the view of the reality within your organization to help drive the learning opportunities and the areas that need to be improved within your organization.
You know, the word that keeps popping out to me, the one that really stands out with dynamic learning capability, is the word dynamic. So what is it exactly about it that makes it dynamic?
Yeah, that's great question. So if you think about, there are some problems that are systemic problems that span across an organization, but typically each product team or delivery team has their own unique challenges in terms of, you know, having less friction of flow, been able to deliver value to the customers and get feedback faster. So it's important to not take a one size fits all approach to addressing a need. So every individual or every human on the team is going to have certain areas where they may need to upskill or learn a new technology. And every team will have their own capabilities. So there's no one size fits all here in terms of learning and meeting the needs of an organization.
It's kind of agile learning. Or is that a different, that's a whole different topic, I guess, right?
No, I think we'd merge it in here.
So why is it relevant to software and to DevOps organizations?
Yeah, it's relevant because if you think about it, every product team, whether your customer's internal facing or you're serving the needs of an external customer, you know, a core of what you're trying to do is deliver value to your customer. And delivering value is really important because it could mean revenue, but you also want to get the faster feedback. So, I mean, that's sort of what I anchor a lot of this to, is like, how can I increase the flow, both of outputs going out from my team and inputs coming back in. And it's, yeah, that's where I sort of see the relevance. In terms of who should embrace that, I don't know if I've answered that before we jump into the who, Jason, or if that covered it.
Yeah, no, why don't we jump into the who? Like, so yeah, that would be great. I think that's the logical next question is who would embrace this and practice it?
Cool. So what I've seen across, you know, my tenure so far and trying to say connected to the community is organizations that are winning in terms of embracing, you know, cloud native practices and, you know, the win, as I'll say in air quotes, digital transformation is becoming an overloaded term, but the organizations that are winning are making heavy investments in their employee and the full-time folks, especially. And tying it to a topic that's pretty relevant today with the great resignation, you know, people leaving organizations for work-life balance or whether it's benefits or ability to work remotely. You know, companies who are heavily investing in the learning and bringing their team members along the journey are investing in the future of their company, investing in their folks staying there. So when I say who should do it, in my opinion, it's, you know, organizations, everyone should be doing it, you know, making heavy investments in their people.
Yeah, I mean, so the one question with the why, actually, that I didn't ask is, you know, we ask why is it relevant? Why is it, I think it's like, why is it important to the organizations? Why is it important to the individual?
Yeah, that's tying it back to the individual, I think is key here. So I think, why is it to key the individual? I think when you signed up for, you know, getting in the technology industry or IT or computer science, whatever journey brought you to where you are today, either knowingly or unknowingly, you sort of signed up for the need to continuously learn. So in order to stay relevant and stay really able to continue to deliver value as an individual, is there's this constant need to continuously learn, continuously sharpen your skills. And I, for one, like, that was really enticing for me to get into the technology field, is, you know, I enjoy learning, I enjoy continuously growing and, like, you know, pushing myself to the next level. So I think if you're meeting that craving, if you're in an organization who's helping you lean into that, and they're challenging you in such a way that you're learning and investing in you to continuously learning, you know, that's important for both the individual and the engineers and an organization, as well as, you know, the organization going forward. Because if you look at it, there's, you know, organizations build widgets or provide services, but at the crux of it, organizations are about people, and you know, it's all comes back to people being your value generation.
Yep, absolutely. I think it was Mitt Romney who said organizations are people. This is definitely not political, but, you know, I just, that always strikes a chord with me because I couldn't think of something that's more accurate. You know, you wouldn't have the organizations without the people behind them, or the person who's building the widget, so to speak. If you're not... if people aren't at least baseline, or you know where they're at, and continuously learning, right? How will you continue to move forward?
And there's a quote that I don't know the author, but if you're not growing, then you're dying, right?
Yeah, so absolutely. Yep, well said. So how? So what are some examples or best practices from your experience?
Let's jump into the how. Good segue there. So first off, I think it's just to tie back to what I said at the beginning. There's no silver bullet here. There's no one size fits all. And I think it's important to take a step back and think about individuals' learning styles. In academia, they call it modals of learning. Simply put, that's folks learn in different ways. There's visual learners, auditory learners, reading, writing. There's five actually. But what I've seen to be the most effective is this concept of immersive learning. Tying that to sort of the DevOps community, there's been a large movement in the industry around the concept of dojos. It's pioneered out of Target. Ross Clanton and a group over there started dojos. And we'll dig into that some of what that means. But immersive learning is the intersection of the need for an organization to continuously deliver value and the individual's need to continuously grow and learn. Simply put, you really can't take, organizations can't afford to send half their staff off to go learn cloud native delivery. And when you're ready, come back and we'll modernize our applications. So how do you do that? Well, it's been proven most effective to bring that learning, bring the need to, we'll just go along with the example of cloud native delivery, bring the need to learn modern delivery practices to a team's backlog. So like the example I always like to use, Jason, is, if I want to learn something, I'm a lot more adventurous than I otherwise would have been without YouTube. If there's something around the house that is broken, I'd like to fix. My style of learning is I'll, research, then I will go find someone who's hopefully fixing the same model of refrigerator that I have that's broken. If
I
not,
have
maybe something similar.
I fixed my pool heater because of YouTube. Like if I and that is like something I am well, anyone who knows me, I'm not a hands-on. I'm not too great with work around the house. If it's painting, I can do it. So I've dabbled in a little bit of getting electrocuted before. So yeah, so if it wasn't for YouTube, my gosh, what would we do?
Yeah, my wife has far more confidence in my handy abilities than I do. But our refrigerator broken, and she was confident that I could fix it. So with some YouTube and some troubleshooting, just like you, it was a pretty proud moment. It's a really simple fix, but to not have to call someone and all those things. And I really can't take any credit. It was all watching some videos and all those things. But it's taking it back though. It is simply taking that approach. Learning in the flow. So I had a need. My need was to fix the refrigerator to keep my food cold. Well, organizations have a need to deliver. So you're just bringing that back and doing it in the flow of their work. That's the key takeaway here with immersive learning.
So tell me more about dojos, because it's a term I've certainly heard before, but I'll admit I don't know all that much about them.
Sure. So let's start with the core of the word first. So anyone who's been in martial arts or has perhaps watched Karate Kid, dojo is a Japanese word for a space focused on immersive learning. It's a place of the way, is I think is how the translation comes out. But really, I think about dojo as a cultural movement focused on helping organizations improve. So in the construct of a dojo, you have practitioners that are hands-on as well as folks that understand the process technology. And it's less of a academic approach to the world and more of this is the ground reality of my organization. Folks who know the paved road and know where the potholes in the paved road are and are actively working. It's also about culture and community. Community is a big part of it, but it's bringing practitioners and engineers to a delivery team and really making the challenges of the delivery team their own problems for the duration of the dojo. So, in the purest sense, Jason, roll back pre-2020, organizations are typically making a physical space at dojo. So you leave your normal day-to-day and you go to a space still inside of your organization, but it's a space carved out where you'll see other teams and practitioners going. It's a great place to have your platform team co-located. The game has shifted a bit since 2020 with hybrid and fully remote, but the concept still remains the same.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a community builder by trade, so this speaks to me. I love the concept. It's almost like, I've been, talking to a lot of people about open source communities, and this it almost has that vibe to me, where you go, you ask the question, someone's going to know the answer, or 50 people will know the answer, but you'll get like 50 different takes on the answer, and one of them will be, what you need to apply. It's I don't know if that's accurate, but
yeah. And I'll warn you up front, this is one for anyone who knows me, this is one of the topics I get pretty passionate about. So just go ahead and I'll give you the license to cut me off or mute my mic or whatever you need to do. But I will talk about, I want to tie the concept of inner sourcing. So open source practices inside of an organization. I want to tie that back to this because I think that's a critical part. Oftentimes what you see in an organization is, whether they're vertically sliced or horizontally sliced, there's the concept of silos. And it's not by design. Like, organizations don't set up to say, you don't talk to this group, we're all put together, but just the nature of human interactions, that's the way, things manifest themselves. So what does that mean? That means you have multiple people solving the same types of problems, right? So how do you solve that? You drop it, I'm air quoting here, a DevOps team or a platform team to solve it all. Well, the problem is, Jason, there's never enough, nor should there be enough people or resources to spread across to solve every permutation. So, using an 80-20 rule, you'll solve the base cases. And then to get to 20%, instead of trying to solve every permutation, you use the concept of inner sourcing. Again, open source concepts inside of an organization where you say, it's almost the platform team saying, if you don't like the platform, you have two options: submit a ticket and wait for it to get prioritized, or submit a pull request. Like, stop complaining and open up a pull request. And I'm not suggesting platform teams, make everyone in the organization the abilities are right, but give them read access, share what you're doing, and then, crowdsource. There's a lot of smart people across the organization. So crowdsource the growing solution. And really, like you said, community building is a key part here.
Yeah, it's almost like if your organization had its own internal Reddit, where exactly. Everybody could go on and answer questions. And yeah, I think that certainly makes a lot of sense. Why don't more organizations do this?
Yeah. It's definitely taken a big movement. I mean, it's a couple of DevOps Enterprise summits ago, there's quite a few talks around Dojo. So yeah, and there's, it's not a shameless plug by any means, but there's a Dojo consortium out there. There's where other practitioners of companies get together. So I would urge any listeners who are interested in take a look at the Dojo consortium, talk to other folks who are doing this. Again, back to community, share the lessons learned and help folks avoid some of the challenges and things like that they may run into.
Are you looking to get DevOps certified? Demonstrate your DevOps knowledge and advance your career with a certification from DevOps Institute. Get certified in DevOps Leader, SRE, or DevSecOps, just to name a few. Learn anywhere, anytime. The choice is yours. Choose to get certified through our vast partner network, self-study programs, or our new SkillUp e-learning videos. The exams are developed in collaboration with industry thought leaders and subject matter experts in the DevOps space. Learn more at devopsinstitute.com/certifications.
Yeah, absolutely. What are some other examples that you have?
Yeah, I'll give you a couple examples of outcomes from a Dojo, because I think we've talked about the concept. We haven't talked about like real world applications. So maybe I'll dive in a couple of those.
That'd be great.
Yeah, one of my favorite examples, Jason, was I was working with a large financial institution here in the U.S. and they had the need to modernize their banking, core platform. So they were doing this by bringing in, they're buying a product, right? So this product was going to use containers. So this is the first time the organization was going to run, take software from a vendor that was in a container. So there was no pattern that existed for ingesting containers. We also had a delivery team who was relatively new to microservices and containerized workloads, like cloud native delivery. So you had a few elements there at play. So taking a step back for one moment, it's also critical to know that, you know, I want to make sure I'm, you know, practicing what I'm preaching here in terms of not a one size fits all. So when you're truly doing dojos, you're as I said earlier, you're chartering a team, you're understanding what the team's business outcomes are, and then you understand what their challenges are. So in this case, the challenges was I need a pattern for ingesting containers, and I need to learn how to run and use these containers. So what we did here, and the reason I like this example, like one of my favorites, is we actually brought engineers from the external vendor to the dojo space. We obviously had the product team who was going to be responsible for running and maintaining this new core application. And the third group we brought to the table was the InfoSec, or the cybersecurity team. Obviously, to ingest in containers, you have to have all three of those elements. So through, you know, tight collaboration, the outcome was we built a pattern for ingesting containers, assuming the containers were untrusted until otherwise vetted by the automated pipeline that would, you know, with building in security, those type of things. And then once the containers were deemed safe, then they were moved into an internal artifact repository or binary repository. And then the delivery team through the dojo, we worked with them to understand how to, you know, pull those changes, taught them Helm and a whole bunch of other things that allowed them to safely pull those in through the security scanning, and then to update the changes and to roll those out to the various environments. So I think the takeaway here is, you know, this is really like back to that community example we talked about. We had cybersecurity, we had engineers from the vendor, and we had the product team all sort of working together. And that sounds trivial, but like the larger the organization, the more difficult it is to get that many people focused in a room on the same thing, you know, dedicated to an initiative for several sprints. So that's one of my favorite examples of a dojo and some of the outcomes.
Yeah, it's fantastic. I mean, you said it about silos. They just kind of exist. And I think we should stop viewing them as a negative, more just as a reality. And I love that dojos are kind of one method of many that are probably needed to break down silos, but not necessarily. I mean, look, you're never going to fully break down a silo, because in some instances you need to have collaboration in a closed environment, but it's kind of bringing that then and having more collaborations across the value stream, right? Yeah, the whole value stream. Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, I think just like you said, it's not that organizations are designed with silos. If you go to the individual parts of, you know, if you just follow the journey, someone has an idea and follow the journey, that idea leaving their head to that, you know, becoming realistic on a mobile application, if it's a banking platform or, you know, an e-commerce site, you're ordering some good. If you follow the flow of that, that goes through many different teams. And if you ask the individual or individuals who are interacting with that idea that becomes a epic feature story, you know, all of those things, a pull request ultimately. But like if you go and interview individually, folks know where the pain points are. They know where the bodies are buried, is the analogy that I like to use. But what organizations don't see, and tying it back to value streams and the beauty of a value stream, is it makes the whole flow, the whole flow and the whole journey visible. And then it's sort of hard to argue. And you know, outside of the visibility, the other intangible piece is it helps build empathy amongst the teams. You understand that, you know, the quality organization isn't there to make my life difficult. Their situation is they're given, you know, their work to do after I'm finished. So if I'm late, I'm making their life hard. So, you know, when you start running through the value stream mapping sessions, you're helping build the empathy, whether you realize it or not.
It's also thinking holistically, right? I mean, rather than thinking on my one piece, which is very important, it's what I get paid for, it's what I go home and I'm supporting my life with, it's extremely important. This is what I want to focus on. But sometimes you have to get outside that piece, think holistically, and that's how that's how the silos break down, right? When everybody can see it in from the I guess the 3,000 foot view, right? I mean, thinking more holistically, how does my piece fit in with all the other pieces?
Yeah, absolutely. And tying it back to community, you know, maybe the priorities that I'm working under, you know, once I see the grander view of things, maybe it makes sense to reprioritize, you know, what I'm working on. Can my team help solve the other problems that will ultimately help, you know, reduce the friction for us? So I think I think that's another challenge that, you know, value stream mapping and you know, dynamic learning can help. Is, you know, everyone has their own initiatives, everyone has their own marching orders. Ideally, you know, there would be, you know, 2 to 3, no more than that, you know, mission statements that everyone's working at. And if I can't tie my stories or my day-to-day to one of those 3 mission statements, then I'd question, am I working on the right things here?
Gosh, yeah, that's the perfect world, right? That's what you shoot for. Yeah, I would think that through the collaboration, that's how you identify those things that you would need to have that learning on, right? That's how it ties back to dynamic learning. But is there anything else that you think we've missed that you wanted to talk about today?
I'd probably be remiss to not hit on a couple of other learning styles, and I won't unpack those as deep as immersive learning. I just have seen that be effective at multiple organizations, but I certainly don't want to dismiss sort of the self-guided learning. I know companies invest heavily in, you know, this learn at your own pace, like video-based learning, things like Pluralsight, as folks may be aware of, so things like that. So there's a place in that. It's obviously not in the flow of what you're doing. Also seen a lot of value in labs. So a lab that, again, it's not in the flow of things, but it gets you into context. So there's a place and time for multiple learning styles and multiple learning approaches. It just depends on what you're looking at. But yeah, I think that's the only other things I would say is, you know, it's, again, you know, I said at the beginning, it's not one size fits all, but then I focus heavily on immersive learning. So I don't want to over rotate on dojos too much without covering the rest of them.
So Eric, which one's your favorite? No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, let's roll back. Let's hit it one more time. Just kidding, Jason.
Thanks for coming on to talk about this topic. You know, you've taught me certainly about dynamic learning and immersive learning. What resources do you recommend that people kind of look into to learn more about the topic?
Yeah, that's good. Yeah. Well, first of all, thanks for having me. Like I said, enjoy the podcast, enjoy what you guys are doing, bringing the human element back to it. Yeah, I will start with maybe, obviously don't want to just say go Google it, but there's a lot of information out there on the community. I think the Dojo Consortium is another good place to look at. And the reason I'm pointing at that is because that's the practitioners, that's the other organizations who are running this. So if I were starting a dojo from scratch, I think I would start. Again, I think we're both big fans of community. I'll start with where the community's at and then start building from there.
Yeah, I mean, I said it before, but I love that component of it. I think we learn so much through communities. I mean, YouTube example is so great because that might have been one of the, not original, but an early form of it, because those YouTube videos are all over the place. So Eric, you seem like a good sport. We haven't asked this question on the podcast in a few weeks, and I'm really missing it. So we like to get to know our guests. And one of the questions that I asked that I have totally not warned you about, so my apologies, is what is one thing about you that maybe you have not shared publicly or professionally?
And I want to tie it back to the way I kicked this whole thing off with bad dad jokes. So I do have a degree in Spanish, right? So as well as computer science. So I have both of those degrees. And, you know, Jason, I majored in both of them because I really just enjoy languages. I enjoy learning languages. And the bad dad joke, because I'm not sure it fell, is you know, obviously programming languages and speaking languages. So
there you go.
So yeah, not quite as exciting as hiking Himalayan, but yeah, I wanted to at least leave you with one bad joke before we cut it.
I appreciate that. I've learned that my dad jokes, I have a lot of bat jokes and I don't know why. And I am now going to be on the search for why I have so many bat jokes. Well, I appreciate you coming on the podcast, Eric, sharing with us a little bit about dynamic learning, but also, you know, some dad jokes and your love of languages.
Alrighty. Thank you.
And thank you for listening to this episode of the Humans of DevOps podcast. I'm going to end this episode the same as I always do, encouraging you to become a member of DevOps Institute to get access to even more great resources just like this one. Until next time, stay safe, stay healthy, and most of all, stay human. Live long and prosper.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Humans of DevOps podcast. Don't forget to join our global community to get access to even more great resources like this. Until next time, remember, you are part of something bigger than yourself. You belong.